You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Good show, I believe, we have planned for you. Rich Catino is going to be joining us in about 30 minutes. Let's talk some Mets. Try to walk you off the ledge there as the Mets now lose their first place standing in National League East because of a loss to the Phillies last night, 4-2. They will go up against them again today. We'll dive into that. But Yankee fans have to feel really good. 7-1 their last eight games. 60-49 is their record. And Brett Gardner, even though he's batting 199, comes through in the clutch. Big walk-off ribby in the 11th to beat Seattle last night 3-2. So we'll get into some Major League Baseball talk, 800-919-3776. I came across a really interesting article. I filled in for Chris Carlin last night. I shared it with on that show. Not sure if you caught that show. I'd like to share it again. It's called Out of the Park Baseball 22. And it's a simulation that's been run quite a few times, like over 100 times, in regards to how the remainder of the Major League Baseball season is going to play out. And this company is in cahoots. They're licensed with Major League Baseball. So I want to share that with you momentarily. I find it to be pretty interesting. So hang tight for that. A lot of NBA news. Way to go, the United States. That was a close one. Couldn't believe going into hosted Weekend Wager last night, our gambling show here on 98.7 ESPN, and was telling people, man, France getting 13 points? Are you kidding me? This is a team that had beat the United States earlier on and then took care of Luka and Slovenia as well. It was a nail biter, but they beat Luka and his team to advance to the gold. 13 points was a lot. I told you to jump on it, take the 13 points. Sure enough, you were a winner in both ways because France covered and the United States. And Kevin Durant, really, really unbelievable performance. And, of course, the big news yesterday that he signs a four-year, $198 million extension with the Nets franchise. And what that means, Kristen, we'll hear from Kristen Winfield, who covers the Nets for the Daily News. He's going to be joining us on the show as well. Good friend of mine, Stefania Bell, reached out to me. I thought it'd be good to have her on, especially for Giants fans who'd like to hear what's the realistic expectation for Saquon Barkley and when he could possibly, as I like to call it, possibly be active and attractive this season for the Giants. And then, of course, with Kenny Golladay dealing with the hamstring issue, reporters are reporting one thing. Joe Judge speaks to the media and says, slow your roll. It's day to day. Giants don't think it's anything serious. So we'll talk to Stefania Bell about the Giants injuries as well as some of the other injuries in and around the NFL, like Dak Prescott, like Carson Wentz, and a number of others. She is the expert at ESPN. And of course, as always, I know that many, many folks are getting ready for their fantasy football drafts, and you need to be in the know. Of course, if your draft is coming up possibly in the next week or two. So we'll hear from Stefania Bell, Mike Tannenbaum as well. And as always, Saturday at 2:30, it's a set spot. It's Joe Wiz. He joins us with his picks and his plays in a big day at Saratoga today. If you're heading to Saratoga right now, hopefully you're listening to 98.7 ESPN. You've got the Whitney Stakes, you've got a number, you've got the test, you've got the Saratoga Derby, a lot of big races and some fun races and some races where you could win some money today. So Joe Wiz will have his horse picks for you, and I will have a few for you as well. There's a golf tournament that's taking place and a few golf tournaments the next 2 weeks getting ready for the start of the FedEx Cup. And that's where at the end of the FedEx Cup, three tournaments, the PGA Tour crowns a champion. Last year it was Dustin Johnson. So it's this week, it's next week, where guys are trying to better position themselves, gain more points so they can be the top 125 that comes here to New Jersey at Liberty National to start the three-leg competition to crown a year champion on the PGA Tour. And just a reminder, we're going to be broadcasting live from out there Saturday, August 21st. They've placed me in the beer garden. Good thing they didn't place me in the Meiomi wine garden. That could be difficult. I don't know if you're producing that day, Ty. But, I think we were really lucky that I'm not in the wine garden. But nonetheless, let's talk about what's going on with the Yankees. And Ty, I know that you're a huge Yankee fan, so you must be thrilled. And I'm sure there's a number of other Yankee fans out there that are thrilled as well. And if you recall, very interesting, when the trade deals went down and Rizzo and Gallo and Heaney's back on the bump today, I I do like Seattle with the points. I'm going to put some money down on Seattle, +1.5. Heaney, his first start in pinstripes, gave up 4 home runs. Just don't think this ballpark suits him. Not sure why he was a part of the deal. Maybe he can turn it around. I don't know. He's 6-8 with a 5.42 ERA. We'll see what happens. I'd like to be optimistic, but evidently, as you can see, I am not. I am taking Seattle +1.5 at -110. But nonetheless, I was really excited and really thrilled with the moves that Brian Cashman was able to make, bringing in Gallo, bringing in Rizzo. And we had a number of Yankee fans who called the show, need to slow your roll, relax. We're cautiously optimistic. We don't want to be too optimistic. You know, still the rotation, a lot of question marks in regard to the rotation, a lot of question marks in regard to the bullpen. But hey, 9 pitchers from the bullpen strutted their stuff yesterday to help, of course, the Yankees get a win over Seattle, like I said, 3-2. And Brett Gardner came through big. Walk-off Ribby in the 11th. Judge contributed. Stanton contributed. Here's the thing. This Yankees team now has really a lot of momentum. 18-8. That's their record. 18-8 since July 6th. And by the way, that is the best in Major League Baseball. So another thing, and I touched on this last week, it wasn't necessarily that this Yankees team started to turn it around when the deals were made. This Yankees team, the minor league players that were called up, if you recall, weeks back when there was a number of guys that had contracted COVID-19 and they had to reach down into their minor league system and call some guys up, and they started performing. And I know, you know, Gerrit Cole took a dip after Major League Baseball was cracking down on the, I like to call it the sticky stuff, whatever these guys might use. But since then, he's turned it around. So, you know, the change in momentum, in my opinion, happened even before the deals went done. And then the deals got done. I had Rod Dibble on the show with me last night. Dibble, who hosts his own radio show in Cincinnati and in Connecticut on 98 points on ESPN Radio, and also a former major leaguer, somewhat of a journeyman who pitched on a number of teams, said, you know, when you bring in guys, it's not just what Rizzo and Gallo can do in the lineup and as well as with their gloves, right? It's what these guys, it's the infusion of what they bring inside the clubhouse. And the attitude and the swag and the persona and just the personality and what, and you have to put a price tag on that. So I just, again, don't tell me to slow my roll. You know, don't tell me to be cautiously optimistic. I was in last week. I'm even more in now in regard to what I've seen for this team, because, and there is momentum. You can feel it. You can't see it. You could feel it. You could kind of put a finger on it. You can kind of, and when a club goes out and I've been calling it money moves, and make the money moves that Brian Cashman did make prior to the trade deadline, again, that gives new life to a ball club that might have been slumping, that might have been under delivering. So I think this has created the perfect storm, in my opinion. And I like what we've seen here. Now, what are the negatives? Again, Heaney, I'm not expecting much from him. Hopefully he could turn it around. We'll see. Not really big high on him, obviously. And I'm going to give you the negatives because I don't want to make it seem like I'm drinking, you know, all the blue Kool-Aid. Right? Defense wins championships. You look around Major League Baseball, you look at the teams that have won World Series. They don't just have one ace, they have two. There's question marks in regard to Gerrit Cole. I get that. There's question marks in regard to this bullpen. I get that. Severino expected to come back. Will he be vintage Severino? Will he be a shell of himself? We don't know. There's so much that is going to be hinging on really Severino getting back and just how good or how great this rotation could be. Only time will tell. But right now, I like what I see. When we get back, like I said, I want to share with you this. I came across this article. It's called Out of the Park Baseball 22. And they ran a ton of simulations in regard to how the remainder of the season is going to play out. And I will share with you what the expectations are for the Yankees and the Mets. And also we got, like I said, we got Rich Catino, who's going to be joining us to talk about the Mets. No bueno. losing to the Phillies 4-2. They lose that first place slot in the National League East. Kyle Gibson, who, by the way, a pitcher I would have liked to have seen Cashman in the Yankees get, but nonetheless, six solid innings for the Phillies last night. Gave up one run, four hits, three strikeouts. Also had an RBI. Harper with a home run. Didi Gregorius with a home run for the Phillies as well. Ian Kennedy, part of a trade deal that the Phillies locked in before the trade deadline, came in for his 17th save. So the Mets, polar opposite than what's going on with the Yankees right now. And it'll be really interesting to hear what this article says and how this simulation believes the season is going to play out.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
One thing I thought was crucial and was key heading in was, you know, the loss of CeCe Sabathia is really a big leader in that clubhouse. Brett Gardner, definitely another leader, and you needed somebody like that in the clubhouse, even though Aaron Judge obviously plays that role. And I'm always someone, I believe you've got to put a price tag on that. So we'll see what happens, the future for Brett Gardner moving forward. All right, 800-919-3776. I'll get your calls in just a second. I know we've got some calls coming in wanting to talk Yankees, but I want to share this article. I thought it was really interesting. Okay, so simulation ran, I don't know, 100 times, a few hundred times, and this company, these brainiacs, license with MLB. So it's part of like an MLB experiment, I guess, let's call it. So in the simulation, it has the Yankees finishing 92-70. And therefore, with that record, they would win the first wild card spot out of the American League. Okay? So then they would advance the wild card game and they would beat the Toronto Blue Jays in that first wild card game. Then they would advance to take on the Astros in the American League Division Series, and they would upset the Astros in that division, which means that the Yankees would then advance the ALCS and take on the Chicago White Sox. However, they lose to the Chicago White Sox in seven games. That's what the majority of, you know, the simulation, that's the majority of how the outcome will be. It's kind of like reading through a, you know, one of those, what are they called? Like the glass tie. What are those things called? The little, do you know what I'm talking about? Crystal ball. There we go.
Crystal ball.
Were you trying to guess what I was saying as well?
I was trying to follow along, but I couldn't.
Okay. All right. So this is somewhat of a crystal ball of sorts. For the Mets, they finished 78-84. The Braves actually have the simulation, have the Braves winning the National League East with a record of 83-79. But then, you know, the final conclusion is the World Series, and that's the White Sox over the Milwaukee Brewers. And that series goes 4-2, which, by the way, I took a gander. You can actually, right now, you can bet on who the two teams that you think will advance to the World Series. And in White Sox and Milwaukee Brewers, 20-1. So I threw a little change on that as well. But nonetheless, I found this to be interesting. I wanted to share with you, take some notes, see if this is how it all plays out. And, you know, I think it could be fun. 800-919-3776. I want to throw this out as well. I'm curious for Yankee fans. If this is the way that the season ends up, right? And by the way, I think this is really very, very realistic. You know, to sit and assume, I mean, how great would it be if the Yankees, you know, win the division? I don't believe that they're going to win the division over the Rays. I think the Rays will win the division. But, you know, I think it's very realistic that they could get in as the number one wild card, right? Beat the Jays, upset the Astros, and then go the distance against the White Sox in the ALCS. And Ty, I know you're a huge Yankee fans, and a Yankee fan. I want to open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. Based on the moves that the Yankees have made, the way that they've been playing as of late, again, big question marks in regard to the rotation as well as the bullpen. But if that's the way that the season ends, let's say the Yankees go all the way to the ALCS and lose to the White Sox in seven games, would you still label the season as a disappointment?
Yes, it was. No team had better odds to get to the World Series out of the American League than the New York Yankees. And yes, you can say you recalibrate your expectations because at the All-Star break, they're 8 games back in the division, 3 games back at the wild card. The pitching was a mess. The bullpen was in shambles. You had the awful losses to the Angels and the Mets and the Astros. The offense was a mess, not just because, you know, guys couldn't hit, but you had no lefties. The defense was in shambles. So you can look at all of that and say, wow, if I fast forward and you get this team to the American League Championship Series, you got to look at it differently. I just don't. I think it's still one of the most talented rosters in the sport. And, you know, based on how they
when it, play, when it comes to the lineup, not the rotation, though.
Well, the rotation, yeah, outside of Gerrit Cole, you know, you can't rely on Severino and Kluber coming back because those guys have been hurt. So are you expecting them to come back and immediately have an impact? Sure. But, yes, the offense, outside of the pitching, the bullpen should still be performing well. I know Chapman had his rough patch, but with Britton being back and Green, he gave up the run last night, but he's pretty reliable. And Chapman being an all-star closer, the bullpen should be good enough for you to have some success in the playoffs. And I think getting to the World Series, that has to be the floor.
It's interesting. I disagree with you. 800-919-3776. Because I have some big question marks about this rotation, and I say this time and time again, defense wins championships. I feel you need to have a more, and not to take anything away from this lineup. This lineup is ridiculous. And I get that. But pitching wins championships. And you're right. I mean, we could sit here, we could be as optimistic as we want to be about Kluber and Severino, but there's no guarantee. And these are two guys that, you know, obviously you're dealing with some health issues. So, but if the Yankees were to go the distance against the White Sox in the American League Championship Series, I still would say that this is a very successful season. But it's interesting. You know, I'm sure that there's Yankee fans out there that would say, no, it's World Series. Let me ask you this. Is it making it
just
to the World Series? Just
make it.
Okay, so it's not winning the World Series. Just for you, it's making it to the World Series.
Yeah,
interesting. Okay.
Well, we got Jake. Jake's a Yankee fan, too. I'm pretty sure you would agree with me.
Are you – what level of success – again, you know, the simulation has them losing to the White Sox in 7 – in the ALCS, to me, that's a successful season. Obviously, you want to see them win. Love to see them win the World Series. But for you, what dictates a successful season based on what we've seen from this new and improved lineup?
So I actually disagree with you and Ty. I think that every year that they have Gerrit Cole and Aaron Judge and all of these guys, if they don't win the World Series, it's a failure.
Wow. So Jake says World Series or bust. Ty says get to the World Series or bust. I say go the distance in the ALCS or bust. Very funny. Very interesting. 800-919-3776. We come back. We've got Rich Catino. We'll hear what he has to say. Also, we'll get a Mets update from him as the Mets, they are reeling. You've got the Yankees skyrocketing. Mets heading in a different direction. Very important series against the Phillies this weekend, that's for sure. More to come.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, good friend of mine, she's joining us from the left coast, and she has a busy day ahead of her, Dallas and the Rams training camp, and that's Stefania Bell. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little disoriented to like time zones and like where when you travel, when you're on the road and you're only in a city for like a day or two and you wake up and you have no idea where you are, that moment of panic, that's me right now.
Yes, yes, I have been in that situation before. Stefania, so I know we only have you for a short period of time because I so appreciate your time, and I know you got a busy day ahead of you. Let's kick it off first and foremost with what's going on with the Giants. Everybody wants to know, when is Saquon Barkley going to be active and attractive? How soon can we see him play? I don't see him playing week one. I think what the Giants could do, maybe they do, is they put him on the active roster, but then they put him on IR. I think we'll be lucky if we see him week four. That's what my estimate is. That's what I anticipate to happen. What are you hearing? What do you know?
You know, it's so fluid. I mean, I think the facts are that it's fluid. I think the facts are that they haven't set a date. I think when they talk about, like, seeing how he progresses, I think all of that is legitimately true. I agree with you that I think it's unlikely that we see him week one. But I could also see them, you know, having him start early in the season with getting some limited amount of plays on the field. Because keep in mind, coming off this injury, ACL, MCL, medial meniscus repair, which makes the surgery more complex, and a bit of a slow going in his rehab. Obviously, we didn't see him in OTAs, and he has not participated in camp yet. It's one thing to be cleared to return to play. Like, we're seeing enough that we will fully clear you. That means practice with full pads. You can do whatever. You could potentially play in the game. But it's another thing to return to performance. And when you think about Saquon Barkley, the running back, at his top performance, that's a physical runner who's breaking tackles, dragging defenders with him potentially. And he's only been working independently right now. So there is a transition that has to happen between just looking good enough to engage in contact drills and actually playing four quarters of NFL football. And I don't know why it seems to be there's so much resistance to that concept. People are like, is he coming back? Like, it's kind of like they feel like if he's coming back, he comes back, we get him at 100%. And that's just not usually how these things work. There is a progression. And the Giants have invested in him. They picked up his fifth-year option. They want him for longer than just this season. So they're going to be smart about when and how they bring him back.
You know, I think Adrian Peterson set an unrealistic bar for a number of guys returning from ACL injury. And of course, you pointed out that this was much more than ACL as well. I think a lot of times we do that. We compare athletes to one another. Don't you agree?
Oh, all the time. And, you know, if everybody could just think back to how long ago Adrian Peterson was and how many ACL surgeries have happened in the interim between then and now. And yet he remains the standout in terms of the recovery timeline. There's a reason for that. He was an outlier. And when you do science, you look at what's the median return time, and the median return time for these types of surgeries and recoveries, and again, nuance depending on the player and exactly what they had to do in surgery and the way their rehab goes, et cetera. But it's typically 9 to 12 months. And then you have outliers, you know, beyond the median. And Adrian Peterson was an outlier. And it's unfortunate when players try to compete with that, because they really shouldn't be competing with the timeline. That they should be trying to get back at their healthiest and to be able to perform at their most, suffer injury setbacks as a result.
Stefania Bell joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Another Giants player I want to tee up for you, and that is Kenny Golladay dealing with a hamstring issue. It seems like the media is reporting one thing, and then Joe Judge speaks to the media and kind of says, slow your roll, he's day-to-day, it's not as severe, it's as bad as the media is first reporting. What do you know, what do you hear about Golladay? How concerned are you?
Okay, here's the context. Hamstring injuries are the number one result of lost time in the NFL. So they are a big deal, and they're a big enough deal that the NFL formed a task force to study hamstring injuries and look at what are the best interventions, what do we think are the causes of these injuries, why are they such a problem in terms of recurrence, you know, why does a minor injury, is it such risk of becoming a major injury? And guess who chairs that task force? It's Lee Weiss, the physical therapist for the Giants. So believe you me, they are well-versed. They understand hamstring injuries. Lee is very smart. And I would not be surprised. Remember, Kenny Galladay didn't play for the second half of last season, had a hip injury. There was a lot of concern. The Giants obviously signed off on him on a physical to bring him to New York and paid him well. And they wouldn't have done that if they didn't feel confident about his health. I believe that. But the minute something like this happens, you're saying, okay, we are not going to rush him back. If anybody knows about hamstring injuries, it's Lee Weiss of the Giants. And so I would expect them to be more on the conservative side. And maybe 2 to 3 weeks is not unreasonable. What they don't want is for him to come back week one of the season and then all of a sudden have a severe hamstring injury that costs him Julio Jones-type time. Remember last year with Julio Jones where he was in and out, up and down all year long. You don't want that. So better to rest him early and get this out of the way.
You know, you mentioned the Giants. It was a little eye-opening to me that they signed off on both Galladay and Kyle Rudolph, considering that both of them have been dealing with some injuries. But we'll see what happens there. Stefania, let's go big picture. Let's stay in the division, and that is Dak Prescott, right? Coming in, I had some concerns in regard to his ankle injury, compound ankle fracture last year, but now dealing with an elbow. And we both know, I've played sports, so have you. We've been around sports. A lot of times your body compensates for one thing or another, and then other injuries start popping up. Do you feel, is this what we're seeing with Dak right now?
Hard to know. You know, it's a lat injury. It's a little unusual. We see it in throwers. You see it in baseball pitchers most commonly. And we never used to hear about it, but the lat does control throwing. It plays a role in controlling deceleration. And it's a big muscle, and you want it to heal. If you're a thrower, if you're going to be throwing the ball multiple times, you don't want something minor. Well, look, we were just talking about that with a hamstring. But likewise, especially for the position Dak plays, you don't want something relatively mild to turn into something bigger. So whether it's I don't know that we can necessarily say it's, you know, some kind of consequence of the ankle issue. I think it may be more a consequence of just not being in football for so long. And then you're all of a sudden subjected to activities that are not really what you've been doing for such a long period of time when you've been out with an injury. But as from all the reports, as far as his ankle, he's been running well. He had no limitations. He was doing work in OTAs that was beyond what they expected. So, but for me, coming back to the type of ankle injury he had, the biggest question is mobility. You know, does he look as mobile as he did before the injury? And sometimes that takes a while to come back, especially when you're facing defenders. He certainly sounded like he's in a good mental space as far as the ankle, not really worried about that. I think he's very comfortable with playing against at least his team defense. We'll see how he looks when he's able to get out there against a real team.
I love Washington.
Say a real opponent.
I love Washington.
Defense would not appreciate that.
I love Washington this year in this division. I really do. We'll see how it all plays out. Carson Wentz in the Colts. That was another team that I liked coming out of that division, and unfortunately, has a bone removed out of his foot. Here's another thing I find interesting: Quentin Nelson, the offensive lineman. Same injury, mm-hmm. Same surgery. From what?
So weird.
Was this?
So weird.
Is this a cleats thing? I mean, were they like? Do we know? Yeah. I mean, there's some speculation that the shoes they were wearing were. Is that even a thing?
Right. I don't think for this injury, these just don't happen that often. It's so weird. I don't think, you know, you can try and look for all the correlations in the world and never come out with this happening to two guys. And it just shows you it's not anything to do with the position. You got two totally different positional players. But their positional demands might dictate how quickly they come back, you know, which are very, very different. For a quarterback who's got to be on the move, who's not planning as hard, versus a lineman who has to dig his foot into the ground, is encountering tons of force. So it's really, I can't emphasize enough how strange this is, that they would both have this same injury. Very unique. And really, it's an issue where you have a chronic condition that's aggravated by an acute injury, and the removal of the fragment does help resolve the problem in the future. So I think one of the factors in the decision-making to do the procedure is you don't have to worry about it anymore. I mean, anytime you do surgery, I think people need to be reminded that, you know, there are risks. That's why we sign waivers when we go into surgery. There, it's never a gimme when you go into surgery. But that being said, surgeries are fairly routine. And I think the when they weighed the pluses and the minuses, getting this taken care of, and particularly for Carson Wentz, who has had a litany of injuries in his past, and here he was off to a fresh start in a new place. And I'm sure that had to be frustrating, you know, and probably worrisome for him. Like, here I am with this new team, and now this happens. So I think taking care of it with a surgical procedure kind of gets it, okay, you're going to move past it. You rehab, and when you come back, this is not going to be an issue for you ever going forward.
So timetable. What I mean, listen, we're not seeing the Colts' knee-jerk reaction going out and trying to bring in Marcus Mariota or Trubisky, or even reaching out to your San Francisco 49ers to try to bring in Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm here. I spoke to a few scouts. I called a few scouts, and they said that Eason isn't half bad. And I wonder if the Colts are confident that Eason could come in and start maybe 3, 4, 5 games and be productive. What are your thoughts on the timetable?
Yeah. I think that, you know, a lot of people accuse the Colts of, you know, being coy with this 5 to 12 week timeline. It's actually a very reasonable range, given the fact that this is an injury that does and a surgery that don't happen very often. So there aren't a ton of cases to go on. As you know, when you have high numbers, you're obviously going to be able to narrow down the window much more clearly. But this is something that there's only been a few NFL players who really had to have this procedure. So, you know, the average based on a paper that was written that looked at some cases is 10 weeks, but that's only a few people. It could be as early as 6 weeks. It could be as far out as 12. So I think that if things go really well, it's not unreasonable to think he could come back fairly quickly. But again, a 17-week season, I think everyone's got this in mind. It's better to make sure somebody is fully ready to be out there. And obviously this is going to take Carson Wentz out of preseason games, this injury. So before you put him into an NFL game, you want to be 100% sure that he's comfortable with everything and ready to play and not worried about that foot at all.
Stefania Bell joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Two final questions before I let you go. And I know you're heading out to Rams and Cowboys camp today. Number one is, how is COVID in players that potentially aren't vaccinated, and it's been known, you know, that for one reason or another that they're not vaccinated, play into how you are drafting in fantasy football this year? Is it at all?
That's a good question. I hadn't really thought about it because I sort of made the assumption that by the time it got close to most of my draft times, which for most leagues I play in is the week before the season starts, that we would be approaching full vaccination within the league. And we really are. I mean, over 90% of players are fully vaccinated, which far exceeds the national average in the regular population. So I think we should acknowledge that it's been quite a success story. The challenge is that there are several players who are fairly visible who have made their stance on vaccination clear. So we know there are some people who will not be. And the protocols are just going to remain different for vaccinated versus unvaccinated players. And I think that as I approach drafts, to answer your question, I will very seriously consider the fact that an unvaccinated player, given any exposure to COVID, will automatically miss more time than a vaccinated player would. And so it doesn't have to be that they contract COVID. Obviously, we wouldn't want that to happen to anyone. But if they have an exposure, they have to be out and be tested regularly, daily, before they're able to return. It's a minimum of, you know, 5 consecutive negative tests for close contact. So that's why you saw the situation you did in Minnesota, where they basically lost their quarterback room. And I do think it's something to consider. Now, we're hearing about Lamar Jackson returning to practice today, and John Harbaugh saying that he had symptoms and that it was actually a big deal. And he was trying to say that in the context of that Lamar Jackson came back in better shape than they expected. But we don't know how that's going to potentially impact a player and their conditioning. And in the case of Lamar Jackson, and I tweeted about this, he missed the acclimation period that players fought so hard for in training camp. There was a ramp-up period before they got to padded practices. The design of the way that's structured was to try and mitigate soft tissue injuries that are typically so common in the first 2 weeks of camp. So if you're a player and you've missed all that and you're suddenly back in full pads, full go, coming off an illness, by definition, you're likely more at risk for a soft tissue injury. So there are nuances to this that go beyond just missed time, as in days away for testing.
Last one for you. It's your 49ers. I know you're a huge fan. You were out there. what are your, and for the record, you know, I love Mac Jones. I think the 49ers should have drafted Mac Jones. I think the Jets should have drafted Mac Jones. That's neither here nor there. The fact that he fell to the Patriots is just ridiculous to me. It really is. But your thoughts on Trey Lance and what you saw while you were out there?
Well, you and I can agree to disagree on that. I was very happy they drafted Trey Lance. I thought he was the best fit with Kyle Shanahan, the best fit for the 49ers. And training camp, if anything, is bearing it out. I mean, the buzz is real. I had heard some of it before I got there. It's hard not to watch him in practice. Players talk about, we were asking several players in the press. I was there for two different practice days, full pads this week. And talking to a couple of the players, like when they're out of their rotations, are they watching what Trey Lance is doing in drills? And guys are like, how can you not? This kid's special. He's fun to watch. Ball comes out nicely. He makes some plays on his feet that are just incredible. I think that's been one of the knocks against Jimmy G was the lack of mobility. And they're installing specific packages for Trey Lance. Kyle Shanahan is very clear about that. And in fact, yesterday, he got the media laughing a little bit because somebody asked a question about how cognizant are you of not, hyping how Trey Lance is performing in camp too much, you know, sort of setting the expectations too high. And I think the question was directed at the context of not setting the expectations too high for the player. But Shanahan said, you know, I'm very cognizant when I'm talking to you guys, meaning the media, knowing that anything he says, people are going to run with. And he said, Trey Lance will play this year. And then he said, okay, I know you're all going to run to Twitter on that one. And then he said, but what I mean is we are installing plays for him. You will see him on the field. I'm not saying he's going to start or anything, but there will be packages and the things that make sense he will do. Now, if you talk to the folks who cover the team and people watching, people are saying, look, if the kid's ready, there's a chance that he ends up playing. But as of right now, Jimmy Garoppolo is the starter. Trey Lance is the number two. But boys, he's fun to watch in practice.
Stefania, you rock. I miss you, my friend. I'll see you for the Fantasy Football Marathon. Have a great trip out there on the West Coast, and we'll see you soon.
Yes, always fun talking with you, my friend.
You got it. She's Stefania Bell, best in the business. And keep in mind, Fantasy Football Marathon, you can catch it all over the airwaves on ESPN, and that's going to be August 16th, 17th, and 18th. It's 24 hours. It really starts sundown on the 17th all the way to the 18th, and then a big draft. But a lot of fantasy football talk will be kickstarted on the 16th. So make sure you tune into all things ESPN for that.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. This is Click.
Click, click, click.
Or don't. Click, click, boom. Very simply, here's the headline. Are you interested in clicking or not?
All right. A fun way we tour around our wide, wide world of sport, find out what is trending based on the headlines. Ty and Jake are producing the show. So, fellas, you guys lead the way. What do we got?
All right, let's start with something that occurred overnight, and it's what I tweeted at Ty D. Butler. The reports of the demise of Team USA basketball greatly exaggerated.
Okay, I'm going to click. I know I've already got some thoughts here, but okay, I'm clicking, obviously. What does it say?
So they beat France last night to win the gold medal. And typically you would say, who cares, right? As we're expected to win. But you just go back the last couple of weeks, and there was a lot of trepidation surrounding this team. And we even saw Draymond Green on Twitter talking about it. You guys really thought we weren't going to win the gold medal. And they had struggled out of the gate, lost a couple of games. And my thoughts are just, it's not that the world is catching up to Team USA. It's just that we're not sending our best players out there. There's no Steph Curry, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. And that's with all due respect to Jrue Holiday, Middleton, and Booker, and all these guys. But you get Durant, Lillard, and, you know, with Steph, like if we sent the 15 best players in the NBA to the Olympics, it would be no contest. So to get the win last night, 87-82 was the final score for France. Rudy Gobert and Evan Fournier led that team. It was a valiant effort. Kevin Durant scored 21 of his 29 points in the first half. He had a dominant run in the Olympics. So Team USA gets it done. And like I said, the world is not closing the gap. It's just when we don't send our best players out there, it's going to be more competitive.
Yeah, listen, I'm with you. And I shared this not too long ago on the show talking about the Olympics. I mean, listen, Japan beat the United States men's baseball team. Why? Well, Japan, they shut down their baseball league in mid-July to get ready and get in to be prepared, and they send their best athletes. I think this is beyond basketball, right? Like it's different when you're talking about like track and field, because, you know, outside of college, you know, this is their grand stage, right? Like track and field. I'm trying to think of like wrestling, like, you know, outside of the sports. And maybe definitely women's soccer, obviously. And unfortunately, they lost. They didn't get the gold medal. But I just feel like when it comes to sports that also have a home here in the United States and a lot of popularity, we don't. It's like the Olympics. The Olympics aren't the end all be all anymore.
Well,
you feel that way?
And it wasn't even a big story today. Dave talked about it on the show. He wasn't really into it at all. He said he figured that he gave like 8 minutes of TV watching to the Olympics. And I feel the same way. I'm not an Olympic guy. I watch the basketball because it's my favorite sport. You know, so I was into the game last night, and Durant being my favorite player, watching him be fantastic, you know, I enjoyed that. But overall, it just did nothing for me. And you don't want to lose it, because then that's embarrassing to me. If Team USA basketball doesn't win the gold medal, that's embarrassing. But as far as the, you know, overjoyed and excited, enthusiastic, yeah, it's not there for me.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot played into my TV viewing last night. I played 18 holes yesterday, and I walked over at Rivervale Country Club, and it was really, really hot. So I came back. I was preparing for filling in for Chris Carlin. So I'd played golf. I was run down. I was probably dehydrated. I hosted from 6:30 to 10. And then my plan was stay home. I'm going to watch. I was excited. I had money on the game. I was
no
hoping
way.
That the United States, oh, of course, you know me. I was hoping
you're not a big gambler.
Oh, no, of course not. So I was hoping that the United States was going to win the gold, but I just thought 13 points. France was getting 13 points, Ty. Yeah. 13 points?
Well, they took,
I was all over that.
Yeah.
But
I remember watching, I was doing the show last night. So Zach LaVine goes on his own like 5-0 run. Team USA goes up by 13. I want to say it was late in the third quarter, and I thought that was it. Like, they were going to blow the doors open. But for somehow, France finds its way back into the game. USA turns the ball over on one of the final possessions. Evan Fournier hits a three, and all of a sudden it's a three-point game. I'm like, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
But I guess, my point, just to kind of sum up what I'm saying, is I'm sure my day played a role into it, but I couldn't stay up. I tried. I wanted to. I was excited. That was my Friday night. But I just didn't. And so, yeah, I mean, I just, and I don't know, this whole Olympics, it's like, you know, there's nothing that I'm racing home to watch. There's no appointment television for me when it comes to the Olympics. Mm. And that's sad, because that's not how I grew up. I mean, you know, the Olympics have always been the end all be all. And it's just not. It really isn't. I think it's kind of sad state of affairs.
Jake's got a story coming, but real quick, just came across my timeline. So Adrian mm-hmm. Wojnarowski reporting that the NBA is opening up investigations into, this is cute, possible tampering violations involving two sign and trade deals completed in free agency, New Orleans and Chicago. That deal centered on Lonzo Ball, and then with Toronto and Miami centered on Kyle Lowry. The NBA is expected to examine early contact on these deals ahead of the opening of free agency at 6 p.m. Eastern on Monday. I mean, what is the league doing? We know tampering's happening everywhere and across every sport. No one's waiting on, it's 5:59. I can't reach out yet to the New Orleans Pelicans to inquire about Lonzo Ball. Let me wait until 6 o'clock. That's not happening. This is a joke of a story.
Well, this is why the NFL has allowed kind of like a wink, wink window, like, you know, free agency doesn't start until 5 p.m. on this day, but the 24 hours prior to that, you want to make calls. Okay, we'll turn a blind eye. Wink, wink. Because again, you know it happens.
It does.
It's happening.
In every sport, it happens. It happens in every sport. I get you want to police it because you don't want to have any unfair advantages given to teams and agencies. But, you know, so I just wanted to update you on that. But Jake has another one here.
Let's go.
All right. So my story is Beasts in the East.
Ooh. Okay. Well, there's a lot of Easts here in New York, so I'm definitely clicking that.
That is very true. So you are getting warmer. There are a lot of beasts in the East, and since we were talking basketball, I thought I'd stay on topic. I'm not talking about the Nets. I'm not talking about the Bucks. I'm not talking about the Heat or the 76ers. I'm talking about our beloved New York Knicks and the free agency that they've had so far. At first, I didn't really know how to feel about it. It seemed like they were just kind of retaining the guys that we had. We added Evan Fournier, who we saw last night in the Olympics, had a pretty good game. But adding Kemba Walker for essentially nothing, it was a very low-risk, high-reward deal. And getting Julius Randle to take a massive discount definitely changes the whole tenure of the offseason. So my question, Anita, is do you think that this team legitimately can beat any of those top four teams in the East, whether it is the Nets, the Bucks, the Hawks even? Do you think that the Knicks are on the same level as any of these teams?
You're asking me if the Knicks are on the same level as the Nets?
Well, not the Nets, but maybe more more so teams like the Hawks and the Heat. Are they a legitimate contender in the East?
So, I do believe the Knicks got better. I know a lot of people weren't thrilled with what they did in the draft, but again, I think the moves that they made in the draft, from what I've read and from what I understand, they got the players that they coveted lower than they had to draft them, and they were able to stockpile more picks that I think is going to lead into a really big 2022 summer. Just my two cents in regard to the draft. In regard to what they did in free agency, I think they absolutely made the team better. Listen, so much pressure was put on Julius Randle against the Hawks in that series. You know, obviously he was struggling. The Hawks defense that they brought to the table exposed a lot of his weaknesses, and there weren't a lot of other options for the Knicks to score and be competitive and possibly win in advance to the next series, the next round in the postseason. So I do like what the Knicks have done. You know, could I see them be more competitive in a first round series against the Hawks? Absolutely. In fact, I think the Hawks take a step back this coming season, but I do like what we've seen. I just think me and the media and Knicks fans have to have realistic expectations for the Knicks heading into this coming season. And that is baby steps, better than last year, but you know, don't expect the world yet. I think after 2022 is when I think hefty expectations could be warranted.
All right, to run through these real quick. Speaking of baby steps, New York Mets.
Uh-oh.
All right, what? So coming into last night, Fangraphs gave the New York Mets just a 42.8% chance to make the playoffs. Now, why this is very interesting is, you know, for the last 90 days prior to last night, before they lost to the Phillies, the Mets had sole possession of first place in the National League East. Now they lost that game. They're in second place today. If they lose again and the Braves win, they're back. They're all the way down to third place. So you look at where the Mets were flying high. It was like a tale of two tapes. The Yankees were the team that was struggling. The Mets were flying high. DeGrom's the greatest pitcher of all time and yada, yada, yada. And now it feels like the roles have reversed. You know, they've been, you know, bitten by some injuries here. But this team right now is in a tailspin. And it's a big series because you've got the Dodgers and the Giants coming up. You know, you play them multiple series. I believe they play in a span of 2 weeks. You play the Dodgers two different series and the Giants two different series. So you got to find a way to win this game if you're the Mets today. Got to find a way to win this game.
Here's the thing. I think that this division is going to be competitive to the end. I really do. You know, because with the Phillies, the Mets, and the Braves, you know, the Nationals, they're pretty far out. Obviously, the Marlins, but with those three teams, the Phillies, the Mets, and the Braves, I think it's going to be really competitive throughout. So I'm not, even if the Mets lose this series, I'm not waving the white flag. I'm not panicking. I'm not pushing the panic button yet. I think there's going to be an ebb and flow to the remainder of the season with these three teams. So I'm not going to panic as much, but at the same time, we had Rich Coutinho on earlier today, and he even said, he talked about it. We talked about it, the significance and the importance of getting Jacob deGrom back. That is going to be so key and so crucial come September. And that's really where this Mets team is going to have to make some noise and gain some ground and really make a big push to win the National League East. If they could just kind of stay within reach and just kind of tread water until Jacob deGrom gets back and gets healthy, they've got a shot here. They've got a chance. Is that it for Click or Don't Click?
I think that's it. I think we covered a lot of the NBA. We were going to talk a little bit of baseball with the Yankees too, but the game's going on currently and they're losing 4-1. So we thought we'd save it for a little bit later on to see what happens with the Yankees today. But for the most part, it seems like the Yankees are back, right? The evil empire is back for the most part.
Wow, I haven't heard them be called the evil empire in a long time, but you're absolutely right. It is bottom of the third. Seattle is up 4-1. And Heaney, three innings, three hits, four runs, and have given up a home run, five strikeouts, three walks as well. That's his stat line. That's his number. But again, looking at this lineup, this lineup is just ridiculous. DJ, Rizzo, Judge, Gallo, Stanton, Nador. We'll see what happens. Never count the Yankees out. But right now, after three innings, no bueno. Not looking good for the Yankees. Seattle up 4-1. Anita Marks with you. 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Joe Wiz on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by PlaySugarHouse.com and by Infinity of Inglewood in New Jersey. Joe, what's up?
Hey, Anita, I'm at the Meadowlands. It's a beautiful day here today. I think you should jump in an Uber and come visit me.
I've got a date with my dogs at the dog park coming up. But,
okay. But
yeah, they've been a lot of golf for me this week, so they've been somewhat neglected. So I promised them Saturday is their day. But thank you very much. I appreciate it. I've already got my picks in. I've already got my plays in regard to Saratoga, some big races taking place. Starting at 4:34, race number 8, the Test Stakes, Bella Sophia, the number 8 horse. I'm on that horse. What is do you have a play in the in race number 8? What are some of the races that you're looking at? What are some of the horses you like today at Saratoga?
Yeah, you look at race 8. Bella Sophia is going to go off at 6-1 with Sayaz and Rodriguez at 6-1. But Anita, there's a strange guy who hasn't been in New York for a while. Bob Baffert makes his debut at Saratoga, him and Velasquez with Elimination, the one horse. And there's also another horse in here that I took a shot with, Zagel, with Pletcher and Rosario at 8-1. I actually did an exact and try box in this race 8. I did the one horse, I did the three horse, the seven horse. and the 8-horse, a dollar, Exacta Box, and Tri-Box. So you don't have to bet big. You can bet small in horse racing. But I took the 1-horse. I took Baffert with Velasquez at 12-1 to win the race. It's a little bit of a long shot, but that's what horse racing is all about.
Race number 9, Saratoga Derby, post time 5:10, Bolshoi Ballet, the 6-horse.
Yes.
That's who I like in race number 9. Who you got?
He's very tough to beat, Anita, you know, with the Invaders, with Ryan Moore and Aiden O'Brien. The only other horse I see that could possibly have a chance of beating him is the number 4 horse with Foley and Harrington. But Bolshoi Ballet is definitely going to be very tough to beat. One horse that does have a shot, if you want to take a shot with the bomb, is the 5 horse with Luis Sayas and Kelly Breen. I know Breen from Monmouth. He's a 15-1, and I threw him in some of my exotics.
Okay, and then the big race today, post time 5:48 p.m., that's the Whitney Stakes. It's a grade 1 race, 4 years old and up, and the number 4 horse, Nix Go. Nobody's really given any other horse a shot to beat Nix Go, the 4 horse. You agree?
I disagree. I think there's 2 horses in here that can beat them. I think the 5 horse, Maxfield, who I picked to win the race, I think Nix Go is going to set the pace, take the lead, and he's the favorite, 6-5. But Maxfield is not too far behind on the tote board. Anita, Maxfield has won 7 of 8 races, okay? And his last 2 races, clear-cut winners in Churchill in the grade 2, Ali Sheba, and the grade 2, Stephen Foster. Nix Go is certainly going to be the horse to beat with Rosario and Cox. But I think this Nix Go takes the lead, and I'm going Maxfield, who has done nothing wrong but win and won 7 of 8 races. And I certainly have a soft spot for Swiss Skydiver, the Philly champion and 3-year-old. Don't forget, she beat the boys at the Preakness a year ago. I did an Exacta Tri-Box 3, 4, 5, and I am going with Maxfield to win the $1 million Whitney.
Whoa. And if you want to play a pick 4, race 11, Chestertown. $2 million purchase, but this is a gelding. But that's the horse, the 8 horse. That's my pick 4 play, starting with race 8. Who do you like?
Yeah, and I know you do pretty good with you gave me a tip last week and it won. Thank you very much. It was a little chalky, but I was happy to cash a ticket. And I tell people with horse racing, bet small and try and win big. You don't want to go out there and bet big on horse racing. But, you know, with that in the 11th race here, I took a look at Danny California, which is an entry with Rudy Rodriguez and Luis Sayas. I think with him at Musical Art, with Arad and Atres, I think they have a shot there with 2. You're getting 2 for the price of 1.
Again, Joe Wiz joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. He has his own gambling show here on 98.7 ESPN on Friday nights and again on Saturday morning. Any NFL futures bets you're eyeing right now based on some of the news and notes we're hearing after 2 weeks of training camp?
Well, you know, I always like to wait and see what develops. I did take a shot, as we talked about last week. I like the Giants coming out of the NFC East. I think there's some value there. I know a lot of people on the football team and the Cowboys, but I took a shot with the Giants realistically there. And I'd say with preseason football, look for a lot of games to be low-scoring games. You saw that total, Anita, on Thursday. It opened up with the Steelers and Cowboys. It opened up at 33. It dropped all the way down to 31. And sometimes, you know, with the line moves in preseason, they mean a lot because a lot of the preseason games, a lot of it has to do with information. Some coaches just play to win, and some coaches just go through the motion. So, you know, that's what you really need to look forward to. I like preseason. I know people don't look at value in preseason football, but I do that much more than I do, say, in baseball or NBA, which I don't even look at. But in preseason football, I think if you get the right information and you have the right network of people and knowing what quarterbacks are playing, you have a chance to make some money. But as far as the prop bets, I do like the Giants to win the NFC East. And baseball, I just wanted to throw it out there. I'm expecting in a couple of hours for the Mets to be back in first place. I'm picking the Mets. Everyone's throwing them under the bus, but I'm not a Mets fan. But I am picking the Mets to knock off the Phillies at 4 o'clock today.
All right, so you're taking Mets on the money line, right?
Absolutely. I think McGill is a better pitcher than Suarez. I think the Mets bat's going to come to life. I do like the Mets in this matchup here. Don't be surprised if the game was over the total. But Mets will beat the Phillies today at 4 p.m. I already made my bet at this right here at the sports book here.
Mariners still up on the Yankees 4-1. Heaney, no bueno, four innings pitched, has given up four earned runs, four hits, five strikeouts, three walks. I liked Seattle getting 1.5, and you got that at minus 110 heading into this matchup. I also liked France last night getting 13 points. What was your play on last night's game?
I took the dog. I mean, I had France in the earlier matchup when they played the U.S. And, you know, U.S. can't be trusted because they're a perimeter shooting team, and they won the game. But that was an overlay. Too many points, double digits. You know, such an emotional game when you have the Olympics going on. I couldn't believe the line was at 14. I took France in that game, and I'm on you with Seattle. Haney got blown up in his first game against the Orioles. I mean, he was minus 250. I couldn't understand it. And now he's pitching today. He was minus 200. I didn't understand the line. I was talking to Ty before I came on the air here, and I says, I know he's an avid Yankee fan. I says, no way am I laying 2-1 with Haney, and I gave it out on my show today as well earlier this morning. But we took France, and you're always looking for value. And either Seattle was plus 180. I was happy to take them, and even on the run line, they're 1.5. I think that was a smart bet. We're looking good there, and hopefully people will cash in on the Mets at 4 p.m.
You know, Joe, you talked about betting preseason football. I went 2-1 with my Steelers plays. I had the Steelers by a half at the half. I had them -2 in the game, and then I had the under at 31.5. So I went 2-1. And I shared this on the show just a second ago. One thing that I look at is I look at teams that have quarterback battles, and this is why I like the Steelers, right? And this is why, like, I'm going to bet Denver. Because you've got a quarterback battle now with Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock. You've got a quarterback battle brewing with the Saints with Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. And so those two quarterbacks combined more than likely are going to play an entire half, if not into the third quarter. So I like playing the half for the Saints and Denver as well as the total, because you're going to get better quarterback play for the majority of a half, if not into a third quarter. Do you like that strategy? Is that one of your strategies or no?
100%, I agree with you, because, you know, you have to look at it. The quarterbacks, whenever there's two teams on the depth charts, traditionally New England doesn't play hard during preseason, okay? But now they got Cam Newton, they got the quarterback from Alabama, so you might see some competitive edges there. You might see some more play. I like New England coming up on Thursday, as a matter of fact. But whenever I look at the preseason games, if you look on the depth chart and you see that there's two or three quarterbacks out there that are going to play, sometimes a starter may only play one round, first quarter or even just the first series, but in the long run, you're going to see some of the other starters. So, yeah, it's certain teams are going to go through the motions, like Kansas City and Tampa. They're going to have nothing. They're just going to lay down during preseason, so stay away from those teams. But you have teams that have two quarterbacks that are battling it out. There is value in those positions, absolutely.
And you mentioned New England. I'm with you. You get New England +2 going up against Washington at -110, or you can get them on the money line at +110. And I'm with you because you know me. I like Mac Jones a lot. I'm assuming we're going to see some Cam Newton. I'm assuming that we're going to see, I can see Cam Newton and Mac Jones playing an entire first half. Meanwhile, for Washington, I know Curtis Samuel's dealing with some injuries and whatnot. So I'm with you. I like that bet as well. New England getting to against Washington.
That's my number one criteria. And just when we look at baseball, I look at pitching. That's why I look at the starting pitching. But in preseason football, it's all about getting information, who's playing and who's not going to play. And when you have teams that are battling and have two quarterbacks, you just do a little bit of research and you can come up with the conclusion. And like I said, I took a jump on New England for next week. And, of course, I'm really pumped up. College football's 3 weeks away, and we're looking for some live dogs there already. We got some big dogs playing. We'll be ready to make some big money here. I'm looking forward to being on throughout the year, and I'm looking for some big underdog value.
Fantastic. Great stuff, Joe. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and good luck.
Thank you very much, Anita.
You got it. Joe Wiz, brought to you by PlaySugarHouse.com, featuring MLB Profit Boost, 20% Profit Boost for any live MLB bet every Tuesday and Thursday. This offer is open to current and new PlaySugarHouse.com bettors. Visit PlaySugarHouse.com for full details. Must be located in New Jersey and 21 years or older. Gambling problem? Be sure you call 1-800-GAMBLER. And by Infinity of Inglewood in New Jersey, they pride themselves on serving every customer with courtesy when they're shopping for a new or used Infinity car or SUV. Make sure you call 201-500-1754. Visit InfinityofInglewood.com. Again, if you're going to play the horses today, Saratoga Saturday, here are the horses that I like. Race 8, Bella Sophia, that is the 8th horse. That's the 8 horse. Race 9, Saratoga Derby, Boshi Ballet, and that is the 6 horse. Race 10, I like horse number 4, and that's Nick's Go. And then race number 11, I like horse number 8, and that is Chestertown. So if you want to play a pick 5 in race 12, I like Baystorm. And if you want to play a pick 6, then head to the 7th race, and I like Warlike Goddess. So those are the plays that I'm going to be partaking in this afternoon.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.